Disability 411, show number 32. Hello, and welcome to Disability 411, the podcast for disability professionals. I'm your host, Beth Case. Well, you may have noticed that I was missing in action the last couple of weeks. If you had visited the website, you may have noticed an announcement that said I might get to go on vacation. And if I did, my access to the internet was a bit in question. Well, I did get to go on vacation, and my internet access was a lot in question. So I didn't get a show out that week. While I was on vacation, I got a phone call from work asking if I could attend the League for Innovation conference and do a presentation there on assistive technology because the person that was supposed to present wasn't able to make it at the last minute due to illness. So, of course, I went. And of course, I had none of my podcasting equipment with me, so that meant there was another week missed there. I realized that I didn't have a way of really communicating with you all when these sort of things came up, so I decided to start a blog. It is at disability411.blogspot.com, and I'm going to use this blog for a few things, letting you all know when life happens and the show might be delayed. I'm going to use it for announcing when a new show is available if you decide not to subscribe to the show, but prefer to just download it manually. That's fine. A little more cumbersome for you, but that's fine. And sometimes I find out about something or get an announcement or some information that is timely, but the show's already been recorded for that week, and so I don't get you all that information. So I'm going to use the blog to help with that as well. So I encourage you to check out the blog. You can subscribe to it through an RSS feed, or you can just, you know, check it out periodically and see what's going on. So again, that's disability411.blogspot.com. Now I want to talk a little bit about the conference and maybe get a little bit on a soapbox, so bear with me. The conference was fantastic. It was one of the most well-organized, friendliest conferences I've ever been to. And it was the first one I had been to that, the first professional conference I had been to that was not disability related. The League for Innovation is an organization for community colleges. And this particular conference was on information technology. Now, I wandered around the trade floor talking to vendors who sold software or equipment and all kinds of information technology stuff, and was really pleasantly surprised that the majority of people that I talked to and asked about accessibility or were they 508 compliant, not only did they know what 508 meant, but they were able to tell me how they met compliance. And one person in particular I was really impressed with, they had a demonstration that showed how their software was accessible with JAWS. So that was pretty impressive. There were a few vendors that said, no, we're not compliant, but we're working on it. And here's what's going to happen in our next release or whatever. And only had a couple of people look at me with blank stares, like 508, what? And that's not necessarily saying that their product wasn't accessible or the developers didn't know anything about it. But I mean, these are salespeople. Maybe they just hadn't been informed. But overall, I was really pleasantly surprised. On the other hand, in talking to some of the people that were attending the conference, I realized how little knowledge there was about true accessibility for people with disabilities. Many of them thought that they were being accessible, and they were well-intentioned and so forth. But in many cases, I felt like what they were doing fell short of what needed to be done. And because I really felt like everyone was well-intentioned and really open to the idea of being accessible, I'm not going to name any names or mention any examples because I don't want to embarrass anyone or make them feel bad, but it did point out to me the need for those of us who work daily with people with disabilities to get outside of our little world and reach out more to people who are not so involved with disabilities. And I'm as guilty of this as anyone. Like I said, this was the first conference I had been to that wasn't specifically disability focused. And so I'm putting out a call to action for those of us who know more about accessibility, who know more about what's needed. We need to get involved with people in other areas. If you're working at a college, you know, really get to know your IT department, get to know your web developers, get to know the faculty so that you have a better opportunity to talk to them about what is needed. If you're not working at a college, if you're working at a community agency, well, you know, get involved on committees, get involved in planning with things that are outside of the disability realm, like, you know, transportation or housing, so that when decisions are being made, you can give some input about the accessibility of those projects. In many cases, what I was seeing is where people were maybe technically meeting the letter of the law or the letter of the policy, but really not providing accessibility in a truly useful way. And I think that there's a difference between something being minimally accessible and something being very useful or very friendly for people with disabilities. And so we really need to be involved so that we can help when decisions are being made to be sure and have that input and not wait until after a product or something has already been completely finished to go back and go, oh, you know, by the way, that's not really that accessible, because retrofitting is so much more difficult than if it had been taken into consideration in the first place. And of course, I realize that I could be and have been criticized for saying I know what people with disabilities need when I don't have a disability myself. And I completely understand that. Of course, we need people with disabilities involved in these committees and involved in educating people. But I don't think that that invalidates the knowledge and experience that those of us without disabilities but have been working with people with disabilities for years have to offer. So I think there's room for all of us at the table. I'll get off my soapbox now, but I challenge you all to find ways that you could be involved and to step out of our comfortable little bubble of people who already understand and agree with us. So on to today's interview, which is completely unrelated to anything that I've been talking about. This is the follow-up interview with Rachel Simon, the author of Riding the Bus with My Sister. If you remember a few weeks ago, I mentioned I was going to be having a follow-up interview with her and asked you all to send in some questions that you'd like me to ask her, and some of you did. And so this is a recording of me sitting down with her at the book signing in Borders Books and asking her your all's questions. It's not a very long interview because people were coming up and asking her to sign their books, but I thought it was really interesting, some of the additional information that she provided. So enjoy the interview. I am sitting here once again with Rachel Simon, this time in person. We are at the Borders Bookstore book signing, and so we may have an interruption with the signature or something, but I did just want to ask you a few of the questions that our readers sent, or our listeners sent in, mm-hmm. and just to tell you what a pleasure it is to actually meet you in person.
Thank you. It's great to meet you in person, too.
Okay, so let's just jump right into it. The first question is from Rebecca in San Antonio, Texas. Mm-hmm. And she says that your sister Beth seems to have grown up in a loving family with high expectations. You mentioned that she finished high school. Can you tell us something about her educational situation? What sort of school did she attend? Was she in a mainstream school? What were the attitudes or actions on the part of her teachers were most influential? And I happen to know that Rebecca was a elementary school teacher, so I'm sure she has a vested interest in that.
Okay. Well, actually, I wish I could say that my sister's education was better than it was. She was in special ed. Most of this was in New Jersey, which did have special ed when she was a kid. In some places in the country when my sister was a child, there wasn't any special ed, so she would have been denied any education. Mm. But the education she received, initially it was problematic because according to her IQ, she was supposed to be slated in what were called the trainable classes rather than the educable, which meant for the kids who were going to need a lot more help and be less likely to be independent and be less likely to read and write. And my parents wanted her to be in the educable classes so she would be able to read and write. Mm-hmm. And they actually had to battle the school system to get her into the higher level classes because the IQ score put her in the lower classes, and they won and she learned to read and write. So it sort of started off as a battle, and though she learned to read and write, I think there's a lot of other things she never learned. I just discovered in the past few months she'd never heard of the Civil War.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's just really fundamental things that she was never taught. And I think that in some ways, at that time, a lot of the special ed classes were more kind of keeping kids occupied and not mm-hmm. doing real education. I think things have improved greatly in the time that's passed. She was never in any mainstream classes, always in the segregated classes, but in the same schools as kids who were typically developing. So it wasn't that she was in a completely different school. So that's one good thing, mm-hmm. but I wish there had been many more.
This question is from Gordon from Frankfort, Kentucky. And he says, you must have legitimate concerns for her well-being from time to time. How do you assert yourself as a loving sister without seeming to infringe on her independence? And how does she react to your feedback?
Oh, that's a great question. my sister, actually, that's kind of the core of the story, because I was trying as a loving sister to steer her in what I thought was the right direction in any number of ways, and she would resist, and then I would get angry. And what I needed to learn was that she had a right to resist, and she had a right to do things her way, even though sometimes they're things I really disagree with. Just the way I had to learn that with my other siblings. And I learned it with them much younger in life, and I needed to learn to do it with them.
I was going to say, as I mentioned before, I have a younger sister, and we haven't always seen eye to eye as well. But I can imagine it's a bigger issue when you feel that your sister may not be capable of making the appropriate decisions for herself.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is recognizing that I'm not sure anyone is. And everyone makes bad decisions.
Yes, that's true.
And you have to learn from the consequences of your actions, or you make the same dumb decisions over and over, and nobody can stop you from doing that. So what would make me think I could stop her from doing it? You know, it's only going to get me frustrated and make us more distant from each other. So supporting her in what she does, and maybe saying, I don't agree with that, but then backing off, that's how I show my love now, and it works much better.
Yeah, that's good. This one is from Erica in Sunnyvale, California, and she says, Beth seems to have found a rich and rewarding life on the bus. As you say, writing is her passion. Do you foresee a time when that will change? Will something else take its place?
That's a great question. Yes. And the only reason I say that is because I know my sister enough to know that she'll take on something very passionately and then move to something else. That said, she's been doing this since 1993, so this is a long one, and I will probably go on for a long time, but if it doesn't, I won't be surprised. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she'll go toward, though.
Okay, great. And then our last question is, I love what you had to say about accepting people for who they are right now, right here. I think it's easy for us to stop being present with one another. Mm. Is Beth more present more often than most people? And if so, is this an integral part of her character or something she's developed through her relationships on the bus?
By more present, what do you think the question means?
I think maybe more focused on the here and now.
I would say she probably is more focused on the here and now, but it's not, I think, because she's more attentive to the here and now than most of us. I think it's because most of us think about the future with anxiety and we worry about things that could happen. And my sister believes that nothing will change from exactly the way it is now. She has a different perception of time. And she doesn't, it's sort of like she doesn't believe in change until it's thrown in her face. And I think a lot of people are like that, but will kind of admit if pressed that change does happen. If pressed, she won't admit that change happens. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, because she has a different relationship to the future, she necessarily has a different relationship to the present because it sort of is all.
Everything's here and now.
Everything is here and now, right? And that's actually one of the big challenges of being her sister is, Beth, you know, such and such might happen if you keep doing blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then the standard line is, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And so that can be very, very difficult. But I just try to keep in mind that her mind works a little bit differently, and sometimes it helps, and sometimes I end up going home and sort of beating the wall and going, arr! But then sometimes it
helps.
Come
on up.
Hi.
Hi.
We have somebody coming to a book signing, or?
No, he's never met an author.
Oh, hello. It is lovely to meet you.
And from that point, things got pretty busy, and so I just stopped the interview. Rachel was very pleasant and really wonderful to talk to, and so I encourage you again to check out her book if you haven't already. It's called Riding the Bus with My Sister by Rachel Simon. So before I close out today's show, I'd like to invite you all to become part of the Disability 411 podcast if you'd like. If you listen to many other podcasts, you may listen to some that have listener-contributed content, and that's what I'd like to invite you all to do. For example, you might interview someone similar to what I do on the show, Or if you have an area of expertise, you might do like a little audio workshop on your area. Or you might submit a product review or a book review or anything that you think would be of interest to our listening audience. If you have any ideas, please email me at disability411@jinkl.com with your ideas so we can talk about it. And there are some, you know, technical issues about, you know, audio quality and that sort of thing that we can work out. But it's not that bad. It's not that hard. And I encourage anyone who's interested to drop me a line. I'll help you out with it. Of course, if you have any ideas, comments, feedback, you can email them to me at disability411@jinkl.com. I love getting emails, so write me. You can also call and leave an audio comment at our voicemail line, 281-668-4662, that may get played on the show. Visit the website at disability411@jinkl.com to read the transcript of this show and to listen to all past shows or read their transcripts. Participate in the forums, lots of stuff you can do there. Don't forget the new blog at disability411.blogspot.com. And I guess that's it. So until next time, I'm Beth Case, and this is Disability 411. The Disability 411 podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, and is part of the Jinkl.com family. Music by the Brobdingnagian Bards is used with permission. Visit our website at disability411.jinkl.com.